When lies are spoken with enough frequency to enough people, they become truths in some people's minds. When those mistaken truths are allowed to stand for enough time, they're mistaken as history. This is the path which has created misunderstanding about the state of Israel. Those lies have also created the hostility and served as the catalyst for violence against Israel. My next guest with his new book presents the truth that stands on facts versus the lies that are crafted for political purposes. His book is Reclaiming Israel's History, Roots, Rights, and the Struggle for Peace. He is the executive director of the Maccabee Task Force, founding executive director of Christians United for Israel. David Broad, thanks for being here today, David.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate the invitation.
And two websites for Maccabee Task Force. It is the obvious, MaccabeeTaskForce.org, and for Christians United for Israel, CUFI.org. Now, we use the term history, and history is indeed a foundation of facts. How weak has that foundation been made by those who are anti-Israel?
It's so weak it's not standing. In so many places across America, on campuses, and I'm afraid beyond campuses, and in liberal-leaning churches, and the progressive left as a whole, what stands as the prevailing wisdom about Israel gets things about exactly backwards. I think the conventional wisdom in most of these places is that Israel's the obstacle to peace. And if Israel would only leave the West Bank tomorrow and let the Palestinians have their own independent state there, there'd be peace and flowers would bloom and butterflies would fly. The reality is, and again, this history that people don't know and need to know, is Israel's already offered the Palestinians a state of their own in this land, not once, but on five separate occasions, 1937, 1947, 1967, 2000, and 2008. And each time Israel's offered it, the Palestinians have turned it down. And so when you know this history, you start asking deeper questions, which is, okay, why have the Palestinians turned it down? And you start to realize maybe the problem isn't that Israel hasn't offered to compromise. Maybe the problem is that the Palestinian side, and their leaders in particular, have been unwilling to compromise if it requires recognizing and making peace with a Jewish state next door.
Well, it certainly does telegraph the fact that their compromise does not involve backing off on their determination for the eradication of Israel.
Yeah, I mean, Israel's willing to give up the biblical heartland, Judea and Samaria, which is also a strategic heartland. It is the hill country overlooking most of Israel, which is a narrow coastal plain 9 to 12 miles wide, tiny. Israel's been willing to give it up, but they want something in return. They actually want the Palestinians to say, okay, we'll sign a piece of paper that says we recognize Israel as the Jewish state and we recognize an end to the conflict. So far, the Palestinian side's not been willing to take that step. I hate to be cynical, but when you listen to what they say and watch what they teach their children in their textbooks or what they teach their population through their television and radio, you understand that, people in leadership over there cling to this desire to destroy the state of Israel. They refuse to recognize its legitimacy. They refuse to even recognize any connection at all between the Jewish people and the land of Israel.
And certainly with the new leadership of Hamas, which technically the leadership of Hamas is the leadership of the Palestinians, The idea of compromise does not bode well.
Well, Hamas, forget it. Hamas doesn't even pretend to want compromise. The Hamas charter begins with these lovely words, Israel will exist until Islam will obliterate it. So that's what you need to know about Hamas. They are a terrorist group that doesn't even pretend to recognize Israel. But in the West Bank, you have Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority in control. And they have been part of the peace process. They have indicated that they would be willing to negotiate a peace with Israel. The problem is, whenever push comes to shove and Israel makes an offer, they don't agree to it. They turn it down. And when you look at what they teach and how they behave, and the fact that they, to this day, richly reward terrorists. If terrorists in Israeli jails get a very, very generous lifetime salary from the Palestinian Authority. And if you die in your attack, which is often the goal in a suicide terrorist attack, your family gets those payments. So we're talking about an entity that doesn't only reject peace, doesn't only incite to violence, it financially richly rewards violence. Not exactly a real partner for peace.
David Brog, his book, Reclaiming Israel's History, Roots, Rights, and the Struggle for Peace, MaccabeeTaskForce.org, CUFI.org, the respective websites of the Maccabee Task Force, and Christians United for Israel. David has connections in those two organizations, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. The narrative is that the Palestinians have a homeland that's being occupied by the Jews. What does the historic fact dictate?
So the historic fact dictates that the Jewish people have always had a connection to what they call the land of Israel, what the West, the Christian West, tended to call Palestine after the Romans changed the name of the country from Judea, land of the Jews, to Palestine. They chose the name of Israel's historic enemy, the Philistines, and named the country Palestine as sort of the ultimate insult to the Jews who had rebelled against Rome. Jews have always had a connection to the land of Israel and what the West calls Palestine, have always lived there and have had repeated waves of return. And one of those repeated waves of return is the modern Zionist movement in the late 1800s and early 1900s that led to the creation of the modern state of Israel. Now, when the Jews began their most modern wave of return, there were other people living there, Arabic speakers, mostly Muslim. And at every step of the way, the Jews tried to accommodate that population. Before they had a national identity, when they just saw themselves as Ottoman subjects, the returning Jews recognized and respected their human rights, their civil rights. As they developed a national consciousness, as they began to say, we are Syrians, which was an early identity they took, or we are Arabs in the sense of one great Arab people from Morocco to Iraq, the returning Jews, later the Israelis, tried very hard to accommodate that. And then finally when this people said, no, we are a new people, the Palestinian people, a distinct and new people deserving its own state, the Israelis again tried to accommodate that with these repeated peace offers. So I think, and this gets to the crux of the matter, I think most Israelis would acknowledge, yeah, there were other people living here, and those people have rights, and if those people say that they are another people, be it Syrian or Arab or Jordanian or Palestinian, we should try to accommodate that and negotiate something with them. But on the other side, the Palestinian side, there's no idea that the Jews have any connection to the land, no recognition of that, and therefore no legitimacy to the idea of compromise. And to me, if you had to summarize what drives this conflict, it's exactly that. That one side recognizes the legitimacy of the other and seeks to accommodate that claim, and it's the Israelis who do that. And another side, at least their leaders, refuses to recognize the legitimacy of the other side, and because they don't recognize its legitimacy, they won't ultimately compromise with it. And that approach is coming from the Palestinian side. And that's why you have a situation with these five Israeli peace offers that are all turned down. That's what's driving the conflict. But most people, not knowing that history, have this knee-jerk reaction to see a conflict and to blame Israel for it.
Do we know to what degree in Israel itself is there a separation between generations, between political beliefs, as far as knowledge of what the factual history is? And if so, is that to what degree does that add to the problem that leaders like Benjamin Netanyahu is facing as a means to preserve and honor Israel while still trying to protect her people?
Well, what's happened in recent years is you have a generation that grew up with the following experiences in life. In the early 90s, under the Oslo peace process, Israel left every major Palestinian population center in the West Bank and gave it over to Palestinian Authority control. These cities then became hotbeds of terrorism. This freedom, Israel leaving and giving the cities over to Palestinian control, led ultimately to the Second Intifada, which was a wave of suicide bombings where people would leave these newly freed Palestinian cities, walk over an open border into Israel, and blow themselves up in Israeli buses, cafes, and restaurants. And so Israel had to go back in and stop that wave of terror. Israel left southern Lebanon in 2000. It had had a security zone there to keep terrorists from firing missiles into northern Israel. Israel left that security zone, That did not lead to a decrease in missiles being fired from Lebanon into northern Israel. It led to a dramatic increase in missiles being fired from northern Lebanon into Israel. Israel left Gaza in 2005 as an effort to get the peace process going again. They said, we're going to leave Gaza, take all of our soldiers and civilians out. You Palestinians run it, take it over, run it well, and it'll begin a virtuous cycle towards more concessions and more peace. Instead, the Hamas terrorist organization took over. Missile fire from Gaza into southern Israel did not decrease after Israel's withdrawal. It dramatically increased after Israel's withdrawal. So what you have is a generation of Israelis that grew up during these three withdrawals that were met not with more compromise and more goodwill and a virtuous cycle of peace. Each withdrawal was met with a dramatic increase of terror from the very places Israel left. So a generation that lives through that understandably developed some skepticism about the virtues of leaving territories and handing them over to Palestinian rule. And this generation is demanding that they see something in return, that they see that if we leave these territories, our partners for peace will actually implement peace and not ratchet up terror. That strikes me as one of these important life lessons, sort of being mugged by reality. They're not starry-eyed dreamers, these young Israelis. They grew up with a clear pattern, and I think they have been schooled in the realities of their region. And I think now they're coming with an increased skepticism and a desire to see that the next concessions won't make their lives more miserable and won't subject them to more danger, but will actually lead to peace. When you look at the history, that skepticism strikes me as quite appropriate and quite practical.
David, with his book, Reclaiming Israel's History, Roots, Rights, and the Struggle for Peace, presents indeed the factual history, even the missteps and the flaws that Israel has displayed over the long history and the time, because that is what history is supposed to be about, honesty on all aspects of the point of focus. And with Reclaiming Israel's History, Roots, Rights, and the Struggle for Peace, David does indeed do that fairly, factually, and accurately, along with being a author of History and the Truth. He's executive director of the Maccabee Task Force. On the web, it's maccabeetaskforce.org, and founding executive director of Christians United for Israel. Their website is cufi.org. David, thanks so much for helping everyone gain the better understanding of how we can realize the honesty of today through the actions of yesterday, and that can hopefully bring about a more sane and more fair and balanced tomorrow. Thanks for being here today.
Chris, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.